liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Goodhart, roll call, please.
Director Sesania?
Here.
Director Storm?
Here.
Director Tarnowski?
Here.
Vice President Ohilski?
Present.
President Wright?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll have the report out of closed session. Council Sites.
Yes, President Storm, members of the board, staff, and audience, at approximately 6:10 this evening, the board did go into closed session on two categories. First, under existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D1, we discuss the groundwater adjudication. There'll be more on that later during my report. Second, we went under the Los Osos bankruptcy. Second, we went into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8, with the real property negotiator being Kathy Kibley. The board gave direction but took no reportable action. And that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll move on to presentations and public hearings, item 7A. We have four items that are going to be handled individually. And we're going to goal is to adopt resolutions. And so, General Manager Kibley.
Yes, good evening, Mr. President and members of the board. The items before you this evening are the annual. Are items to be placed on the annual tax rolls. They involve one, Bay Ridge Estates, their annual service charge, Vista de Oro, their annual service charge, the drainage assessment, and then the wastewater assessment for District Number 1, which is the wastewater assessment for the 2002 wastewater project. The items are... we are doing as Bay Ridge, the annual assessment rate is the same as it was last year, $373 per parcel. Vista de Oro, the annual service charge is $216 per parcel, which is the same as last year. The wastewater project, the assessment is placed on the roll. The total amount is $1,198,159.36, and the rate is about $231.98 per parcel. This includes, as stated in the staff recommendation, this includes a $12 per parcel charge to cover the administrative fee for that. And then finally, drainage is $16 per parcel, and the total recovery for that will be $95,456. With that, unless you have some questions, this concludes my report.
Okay, thanks. Any questions from the board? Yes.
You mentioned that the first two, it was the same assessment as previous years. What
That's
about
correct.
The last two, though?
No. Each year, the wastewater goes up, depending on the administrative charge, and then the drainage. I don't know what that per parcel charge was last year, except that it appears that we will actually be getting a little bit more money.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll open the public hearing for the first
same.
Item. Any public comment?
We take them all together.
No, one at a time.
First?
No, we're doing Bay Ridge first. Yes.
Lindy Owen, I wanted to question, I think, I don't understand if the county sewer project came in and took everything away from Los Osos, from the LOCSD, why did it not take the piping system to the Bay Ridge and Vista de Oro estates? That doesn't seem very logical. They took Tri-W. They spent over $150,000 supposedly redoing it, replanting it, making it a park, which it isn't. And it's been a complete failure. But I think the people in Bay Ridge Estates and Vista de Oro have gotten kind of a raw deal because I don't think this was explained to them that they had pipes that were failing. or that there might be some extra costs for them. And I'm looking at their monthly costs. Seems quite a bit higher than the rest of us in the wastewater prohibition zone. So I wonder why the county isn't covering this, and I understand that there was a request that you go to the county to see if they would not cover this as in the loan process rather than have the CSD, who doesn't have a lot of money right now, cover it, because it clearly belongs to the county, not to us, and we shouldn't be having to fix it. And I would love to hear an explanation of if you know why we lost 3 hours worth of water when the people that we hired to fix the sagging pipes had an accident. Obviously, somebody didn't give them the correct data about where our water pipes or Golden States lay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I'm speaking specifically to Bay Ridge and the annual charge. I understand that it is the same as last year. What I think the board needs to do is be in direct contact with that neighborhood about how long this charge is going to go on in light of the repairs that are necessary before the sewer will take them and the sewer project includes them. And I haven't seen an amortization schedule related to the costs for phase one and phase two of the repairs there, and that, you know, clearly these people are going to believe that this assessment will retire when the new assessment is fully engaged. And I know you have not had that dialogue with that community, and I think they're going to be very upset if they don't have a full understanding, and your board has been negligent in bringing them along. So I won't come back for Vista, but same thing. I know you don't have repairs, but because they are underfunded and you are subsidizing them now, that assessment's going to continue, and I know those people do not understand that.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker. Okay. We'll close the public hearing for the first item. Any further discussion from the board?
Yes. I would like to know the status of that request to the county. We, a month ago, heard that we were going to ask the county if they would front the money for the repairs at Bay Ridge so that we did not have to be doing that. And I just wondered what the status of that was. I know Utilities Advisory Committee made that same recommendation, I think, meeting before last. Have we talked to the county yet?
Okay. Response?
Mr. President and members of the board, the staff is currently preparing the correspondence that needs to go and is gathering all the information to support this correspondence.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, bring it back for a motion. Need someone to propose and second?
I move that we approve this item here.
Okay, specifically resolution 2015-18. Have a second?
Excuse me.
Yes.
Can you also, in the motion, put in the motion your staff to submit the adopted resolution to the tax office of the county?
Yes. Okay. We're good? Okay. Second?
The staff report, I'm just making a comment. The staff report has a motion wrapping all of these in the one.
So we're going to do one. I thought we said we'd have to do individual vote.
We're going to, okay. Whatever.
Four motions, four votes.
Yes. Yes.
Correct?
Well, yes.
Four votes?
Four votes.
Okay, thank you. Get a second on this one, please.
Second.
Okay, let's have a roll call.
Director Tarnowski?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Director Sesenia?
Yes.
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes.
President Wright?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing for item 7A2, Visadero Annual Charge. General Manager Kivley?
Yes. Mr. President, unless you have questions, All right. Staff has completed their report.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions before they open to the public? Okay, public comment, please, on Vista de Oro.
Lindy Owen, I guess responding to the general manager's suggestion that she's getting it together to introduce stuff, I think it's a little late, isn't it, that would have been the first step, especially since it was requested by people and suggested that it was to be done. I'm still wondering why we waited so long, and I have to agree that these customers should be notified of what kinds of extra charges they'll be looking at, because I don't think they are aware of. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Okay, seeing none on this item, I'll close the public hearing on this item. Any more discussion questions from the board? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we adopt resolution 2015-19 regarding the Vista de Oro assessment and direct staff to submit adopted resolutions and tax rolls to the county for collection.
Very good. We have a second. Roll call, please.
Who is your second?
Vice President Ohilski.
Director Cesania.
Yes.
Vice President Ohilski.
Yes.
President, Director Storm.
Yes.
Director Tornatsky.
Yes, sir.
President Wright.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on, open the public hearing for 7A3, Wastewater Assessment District, number one. Any discussion from the board first? Questions, I mean? Okay, seeing none, open a public comment. Please state your name.
Julie Tacker again, the Wastewater Assessment District. You know, historically, I think we've been at this about 9 years, 10 years, I don't know. And it's been $222. This is the first time we're seeing an administrative charge. And I don't know that, I'm certain the community doesn't know that. And I think you owe the community an explanation of what that charge will be and why this assessment is going up at this time and hasn't all these years. It's been a static charge. You have to answer to the ratepayers, and this stinks.
Next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson. Following up on what Julie said, this staff report does not explain that $12 appropriately. This is what it says in the staff report. The assessments for the Wastewater Assessment District number one include an administrative charge of $12 per parcel to cover trustees' fees, assessment fees, and assessment process fees. There's no mention in here about pulling the $25,000 out of here to repay the bond reserve. There's no mention in here. And we know that's why that's on here. This $12 is eventually, part of it is eventually going to go to pay back that reserve. There's not one mention of it in this staff report. And, you know, maybe a phone call needs to be made to one of the 218 advocacy groups to see, even though the judge approved that, judges have been overturned before. I don't think it was appropriate. I've mentioned it before at these meetings, and this explanation is pretty poor.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please. Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on 7A3, Wastewater Assessment District. Any discussion from the board?
I do find it curious. I mean, why, after all these years, is the assessment going up now? There's nothing new that I don't think that's been added to our burden. And my other question is, does anybody else hear the radio, the noise, all the distraction going on outside the window here? Okay. I just want it on the record about this meeting, please.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have a similar question. I'd like to know what the assessment was in the past year.
Okay.
Because it's going up to $231.98, and The other two were the same rate as previous years. I'd just like to know what last year's was, the previous year's was.
Very good.
So that follows up to Chuck's question.
Okay. General Manager Kibley.
Yes. Mr. President, members of the board, as you know, your bankruptcy order that came down declared that you were to take the administrative charge, you were to assess a minimum of $6 per parcel per year to, in order to recover the $25,000 that needs to be paid into the bond reserve. And the reason that it needs to be paid into the bond reserve was that back in 2006, the board at that time inappropriately used the reserve fund to make the bond payment. Now, that's not my words. Those are the words that were quoted in the bankruptcy order. With that, you also know that for the years 2007, 2008, and 2006, 2007, there were no $25,000 payments made, which were part of the agreement with MBIA at the time, who was your trustee for your reserve fund. It is necessary for the board to repay what has not been paid and at the same time make the payment that's required under the bankruptcy order. You asked about what your charge was last year. There was a $5 charge per parcel last year that you as a board approved and put on the tax rolls. That's why you had $21,000 to make the initial payment that was required under the bankruptcy order, and you subsidized the additional dollars necessary to meet the $25,000 from your Fund 100. So that made your $25,000 payment for last year. The prior years, all the way back to, I don't have it here, but somewhere around 9-10, the fee at one time was $3.50, and previously to that, the fee was, the total collected was $51,000, so it would have been probably close to $12 per parcel when it was initially put into place. You are allowed to do that. That was part of the resolution, part of the ordinance that was voted on, and the voters gave you that authority.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's $7 less.
No, that's what my question was. So it's $231.98. What was it last year? That's my question.
It would have been $12 less plus $5 for the administrative fee.
So $7 less?
Yeah, about $7 less.
Okay.
That administrative fee is $1 per month per parcel.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, entertain a resolution, please. I mean motion.
Okay, let's see. I move that the board adopt resolution 2015-20, levy the assessments for wastewater assessment district service number one assessments, authorize the district engineer to add $12 per parcel administrative charge to the wastewater bond assessments and direct staff to submit adopted resolutions and tax rolls to the county for collection.
Thank you. Second, please.
Second.
Roll call.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Director Tornatsky?
Yes.
Director Sasania?
No.
Vice President Ohilski?
I'm going to vote yes, but I would like a little further clarification about, not tonight, but this $25,000, because I was involved in the bankruptcy proceedings, and it just not, if it's not clear to me, I'm sure it's not clear to a lot of other people. So if we could come back with some clarification, but I will vote yes.
President Wright?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to public hearing on 7A4, drainage special tax. Director. General Manager Kibley.
Yeah, Mr. President, members of the board, it appears in discussions with staff that the $16 that is being charged per parcel is the same amount that was charged last year. So there was no increase in that.
Thank you. Okay, let's open this up to the public, the public hearing. Anybody wish to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on this item, and we will entertain a motion for the resolution.
I'll make a motion. I move that the board adopt resolution 2015-21 to levy the assessments and to direct staff to submit the adopted resolution and tax roll to the county for collection.
It's actually a special tax.
The drainage special tax.
I'll second that, but I think, point of clarification, haven't we flipped the last two assessment numbers?
I think we have.
No. 21 dealt with wastewater,
didn't
it?
The resolution numbers.
Okay. That's what I was, I was going to ask that same question.
Okay.
So that resolution number is the correct number?
Not okay. For drainage.
Okay.
Okay. Get a motion?
I made the motion.
Okay, second.
I did second it. But I just thought we had flipped the
resolution. We're just confirming we had the right numbers.
Got it.
On the
okay,
resolution.
Roll call, please.
Because you read the staff report, they're in a different order.
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Cesania?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Director Tornatsky?
Yes.
President Wright?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to 7B, the adoption of CPI rate increase of 1.7% special fire tax. General Manager Kivley?
Yes. Mr. President and members of the board, the item before you tonight is the adoption of the CPI rate increase. And with this adoption, staff requests that you conduct a public hearing to consider all objections and protests to this increase. The increase amounts to about 0.26 per unit, and which will result in a $15.76 per benefit cost. The CPI increase for this year is 1.70%. With that, this concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Okay, seeing none, we'll open the public hearing for public comment on this item.
Richard Martinson, did anybody see the Bay News? I think when you read it, you're going to wonder where they got the information or who they talked to. Articles about the special fire tax increase. Starting July 1st, the annual charge will be raised 26 cents, bringing the fee to $15.76 for every $100,000 of value in a property. So a property assessed at $1 million would pay $1,576 a year. This is front page. Front page. How many people in Los Osos do you think now are wondering what the hell this is all about? And then there's it goes on about the description about how the station got here, what the past history was. And it's completely full of inaccuracies. But even at $1 million, it would be $157.60. 10 times 15, 76. I think we need to contact the Bay News, staff does or somebody does, and ask for a retraction on the first page. This is going to raise some eyebrows in Los Osos.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing for 7B, adopt CPI rate increase. Any questions from the board? Comments? Quiet, please, in the back. Thank you. Quiet, please, back there. Thank you. Any questions?
Well, Richard raised a good one, but it's $15.76 per unit of benefit, so it's not per assessed value. So I just want to make sure that's clear on the record.
And the typical single-family residence is five
correct
units of benefit.
Correct.
Yeah,
five.
I mean, we've got to explain our convoluted.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Any other? Okay. Seeing none, entertain a motion on the resolution.
Yeah.
I move that the board adopt resolution 2015-22 approving the CPI rate increase and approve the levying and collection of the special fire tax assessments as listed in the attached Exhibit A, and submit to the County of San Luis Obispo for collection in the 2015-16 tax rolls.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Okay, I have a second. Get a roll call, please.
Director Cesena.
Yes.
Vice President Ohilski.
Yes.
Director Storm.
Yes.
Director Tornowski.
Yes.
President Wright.
Yes. Okay, we'll move on to 7C, public hearing on the adoption of the resolution submitting the district past due water accounts. General Manager Kibley.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. The item before you is allows the district to go ahead and send delinquent water charges to the county for collection through the tax rolls. As you will notice from your report, there are only three accounts that we are requesting to submit this year. The total outstanding to the district at this time is $1,713. And with that, if you have any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay. Any questions? And the process is that people have been notified several times.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. And I will open the public hearing on item 7C. Okay, seeing no comment, we'll close public hearing on item 7C. Any other questions from the board before a motion? Yes. You ready?
Yeah. I move that the board adopt resolution 2015-23 confirming report of the district general manager for delinquent water collection charges and authorizing the collection of delinquent charges on the county tax roll as amended if changed.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Director Tornowski.
Yes.
Director Storm.
Yes.
Director Cesena.
Yes.
Vice President Ohilski.
Yes.
President Wright.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That ends our public hearing portion. We'll move on to public comment for items that is not on the agenda. Please come to the podium, state your name, and your...
My name is Keith Weimer. I've been a longtime advocate for sustainable water supply and sustainable basin. I wanted to congratulate the CSD. It was a nice article in the Tribune that the CSD is... reduce water use 35%. So I really congratulate you on that, and I'm proud to be part of that. Now, if there's a strong indoor-outdoor conservation program that helps people put in gray water and rainwater systems and LID and low-impact development, that's what LID stands for, like rain gardens and so forth, also to repurpose septic systems, then we'll be able to maintain attractive yards while maintaining low potable water use. In fact, it's a good goal to shoot for zero potable outdoor water use, which can be achieved. Someone has to explain to me still why it's a good idea to let a flawed basin plan go forward. The Sierra Club and the Los Osos Sustainability Group submitted additional comments explaining the flaws in that plan and how they could be addressed, and I just hope that everybody received that. We sent it to the parties, so if you didn't receive that, let me know. The groups pointed out that modeling for that for the basin plan is flawed. It finds that just by moving wells, you'll increase the yield by 40%. It doesn't factor climate change. It doesn't factor the drought. The U.S. EPA found that there would be no increase if you factored climate change factors, variables. And Gus Yates, one of the creators of the model, said there would be no increase in yields just by moving wells around. The basin plan doesn't make it clear that a modeling prediction is not something long-term irreversible decisions should be based on, decisions like building. The basin plan should define what real evidence of sustainability looks like. The basin plan provides seawater intrusion metrics. These metrics should be achieved before building occurs in the basin, because building will increase the use of water, the demand of water. Have you looked at the Los Osos community plan? If you have, it is a little bit troubling because it basically says that supervisors can approve building if you just put these programs in place. So in other words, it basically is saying that it believes, or it is assuming that the modeling is correct, that by putting these in a place, you will increase yield 40%. Well, modeling is only a place to begin planning, and it is not a place to put into effect long-term irreversible decisions.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Peggy Pavick. I have a couple concerns I'd like to address. At the June 4th meeting, I handed a list of 6 questions to board members. Mr. Tornosky wadded his copy up and threw it on the floor. Since the public's questions are rarely answered, I called LAFCO and spoke with Mr. Church. Among other things, he said he would send the list of my questions to Ms. Kivley and the CSD board for answers. If you need your memories refreshed, I have that list with me, so let's hear those answers, please. Secondly, I'd like to see the CSD meetings move back to the community center, because the community center has always been known as the center of the community. The list of petty grievances submitted by Ms. Kivley is yet another classic example of how Mike Wright circumvents the public process and community inclusion just to get things done his way. Spare us the added expense of holding the meetings elsewhere and stop the grandiose idea of a new office for Ms. Kivley. This is not the right time for the CSD to consider a real estate purchase or lease. Mike Wright's name is not Jesus. You do not need to follow him.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Lindy Owen, I have a number of things. I kind of believe that what we're beginning to see with our CSD is a shadow government. By taking committee meetings and turning them into, instead of once a month, when we have serious water problems, I mean, we're trying to look at the ISJ and understand where our basin is and what our service water district can do. Instead, we're moving these meetings to once every 3 months as if there was no importance. Again, with finance, the same thing. This is all based on, according to what I can understand, Ms. Kivley's decision. So if anybody's curious about Ms. Kivley, go back and look at just Google Kivley Atwater, and you'll wonder why she is our general manager. We still don't have an audit. We have just thing after thing that I don't want to waste time on. I wanted to say we have a number of people here to speak on the Verizon cell phone, I believe, if anybody wants to raise their hand so that we can be aware of how many people are waiting to get to this subject. And I know that there is a possibility of rearranging the schedule instead of putting them possibly at the very end. Writing notes there. And then the last thing I wanted to speak to is I'm an advocate for forget the gray water. The gray water is a fabulous idea, but it's expensive. Forget the rainwater harvesting until we get back to normal rainfall. Right now we have an opportunity to go to the county. They have $2 million that's just collecting cobwebs there. We could ask them to apply that money to get non-potable water tanks into our yards. We have an upper aquifer that is wasting away into the ocean, and while we pump out potable water to wash our cars or do our garden, all our outdoor use is just a complete waste of at least 30% of our water that we could be saving. If we got potable tanks put into our yards, they're not expensive, and they can last for, 30 years probably. As long as we're in a drought, we better start thinking smart and getting 30% savings by having these big tanks put in. Mine is 550 gallons. I have no idea how long it'll take me because I haven't quite calculated my outdoor use. But if you want to see an ugly Los Osos, watch people trying to live within their 50-gallon-a-day allotment, what happens to their outside gardens. The only answer is to import water, and we have it right below us in a aquifer that is not, it's got nitrates, fertilizer in it. And we do have purple pipe coming online when the sewer comes in. So there's no excuse for not having our government people, you and the county, to move forward with getting this option available and help people with funding for it and make a place where people can have trucks that pick it up and deliver it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And a couple of things that aren't on your agenda. And I've been here many, many months asking that they come, or I've heard board members ask. The first thing being the South Bay Community Center and what happened there and how we can mend that relationship. And I think it's a more suitable location. I don't know where you all parked here at Sea Pines tonight, but I think parking is an issue here. I think access to this room is an issue. Restroom facilities, this is not suitable. It's no longer suitable for this kind of meeting, and you need to change it. I've asked that we have a presentation on what happened with the Palisades well and the damage that was done there and the cost associated with it, and if there's restitution being paid. I simply don't know. We haven't heard the story, and a lot of money has been spent on a well that we shouldn't be using. So I'd like to understand that more fully, and that's your job to inform the community. Last meeting, there was some discussion about changing the bylaws to allow for monthly committee meetings and cancel as necessary versus the quarterly and the inability to hold subsequent meetings or special meetings in between. That has become clearly a problem in the way you communicate with the public, vet issues that are before you, including tonight's cell phone item, cell tower item. None of your committees has seen that. None of them have considered the impacts to the district's property or the district's finances. Those discussions have always gone on at the committee level. And you have valuable committee representation that advise you and help you use them. The Bay Ridge item. Lindy brought it up. There was a little bit of discussion earlier. Wade Horton, the Director of Public Works at the county, is willing to enter into a dialogue with this district with regard to loaning the money to do the repairs at Bay Ridge so you do not have to deplete the water department's reserves. It's a fabulous idea. They are better suited to be a bank than you are. That water money is intended for water infrastructure. You can't use it if it's been spent on Bay Ridge. And the long repayment schedule, Mr. Horton needs an official request from this district.
Okay, thank you. That's
what your general manager has not put together, and
thank you.
I demand that you do it.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
You ready, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Richard Margetson. Many other things I'd like to talk about tonight, but something happened today that I think needs to be mentioned. And Ann Calhoun passed from us this morning. Ann was a huge supporter of this community. She was an animal lover, and I'm probably not the person to be speaking of her virtues. She had much better friends. She had a great circle of friends around her at the end. She had close family members. But she, for me, she was a huge supporter of the Move the Sewer campaign. She wrote numerous articles in under Calhoun's canons in the paper. She was a huge supporter of Cal Fire coming into this district. She wrote articles about that. She was a huge supporter of the increase in the level of service, that 18-month battle, and getting the second fire tax passed. She was a huge advocate for the dog parks in the county. She was a huge advocate for people helping people. She was a huge supporter of the Needs and Wishes holiday fundraiser for the homeless. And my last interaction with her, which will give you an example of what type of person she was, that she always thought about others. About 6 weeks ago, she called me, and I knew what was going on. And she said, I'm going through some of my artwork. I want to make sure, because I'm probably going to be going through chemotherapy, that you get this for the Christmas event this year. And I said, I'd be happy to come pick it up. She said, oh, no, you're busy. You know, she always had time. Everybody else was more busy than she was, which I don't believe. But so she dropped a box over at the People Helping People office, four gorgeous pieces of glass blown artwork and a beautiful pottery pot. Not cheap, expensive items. We talked that day when she told me she was going to drop those off. She called about 2 weeks later, asked if I had picked them up, and she wanted to tell me what was in the box and, you know, what their values were. And they will be on the silent auction this year, so if you want a remembrance of Ann, they will be there. I know one that I'm bidding on right away. And the last thing she said to me, after we talked about not wanting to go into care facility, not wanting to be on life support, she would have never dealt with that well. Remember to put me on the bell ringing schedule this December. She was one of my loyal, never missed her shift bell ringers. She was optimistic to the end. She was a huge advocate for this community. She was a huge supporter of this community. She was a huge supporter of this community moving forward. And she held people's feet to the fire when need be. She will be sorely missed. I will miss her. I hope she considered me a friend, because I considered her a friend. And I think with the last few seconds I have, maybe we'll have a moment of silence.
Thank you. Preacher, I think is a good idea. So we'll just have a moment of silence for Ann Calhoun. Okay, thank you. Richard, thank you for bringing that up. Okay. Any other public comment for items not on the agenda? One more.
Sandra Hedges, Los Sosos. I'm really worried about the building that you guys have been going behind our backs and trying to get the gym over there. We cannot afford $1,400 a month more. It's just insane. And I've seen a few of the back tapes and stuff, and things have been going wrong since day one of the CSDs. It's sad to say, but it's true. And all these water companies, I do not understand why they are not all at severity 3. Because we are at severity 3. And we do need to move some wells. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other public comment on items not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, bring it back to the board. Any comment?
I have one follow-up. To a conversation that we had about the community center.
Yes.
You'd mentioned to me acoustics being an issue there.
Yes.
And that is on our list of things to take care of. I've got a subcommittee appointed to that now that Art After Dark is over. We can focus on the acoustic issue, but we definitely plan to make improvements in that area.
Thank you.
And do we have an update on Palisades Well? Is there anything we can hear about that?
Director Kibley.
The only thing that I can tell you is we have submitted our claim to PG&E, but that's all I can say at this time.
So that's in play with PG&E right now. Okay, and then in regards to the audit, I just want to make a statement on that, that there has been a delay on it because this year it has to do with the reconciliation of the bankruptcy numbers, and that seems to be slowing down the process. So hopefully we'll get a resolution on the audit here shortly. Okay, any other comments? Okay, seeing none. Let's move on to administrative and committee reports. Fire Department. Chief Veneris.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public. Appreciate the opportunity to come here once again and speak before you. Before I get going, I'd like to point out that each of you at the directors and the members here at the table have a CPR flyer there for the public. There's quite a few of them over there. If you're interested, I'd like to talk about it a little bit. As the board remembers, the Fireman's Fund Insurance Company donated a $10,000 and just under $200 grant to Station 15 South Bay. And we did a press conference there a couple weeks ago. As part of that, it's important for the public here and for the board, we're going to be hosting a CPR automatic external defibrillator class. It's an AED class. It costs $10. It'll be hosted free of charge by the South Bay Community Center. The Central Coast CPR is donating 50% of their time, and so it's $10. It's on Sunday, August 2nd from 2 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. You can sign up by calling Station 15 at 805-528-1053. In case you missed it, it's 528-1053. We'd be happy to sign you up. Seating is limited. It's a first-come, first-serve. Again, $10. And for just a couple hours, you'll learn CPR and how to use AEDs, which you're now seeing all over the Central Coast in the United States. So, to my report. You have before you the May 2015 report, Chief's report. In the month of May, CAL FIRE Station 15 responded to a total of 99 calls, which is very statistically average. Two of those were back-to-back. The simultaneous calls, one required advanced life support. 71 of those 99 calls were medical aids, with 36 requiring advanced life support. A CAL FIRE firefighter did not ride in with the ambulance at all in May. There were two staging calls, three traffic collisions, and six incidents reported as fires. Company 15 came back a total of eight times to support the full-time staff. Additionally, in their item three details, the final firefighter and his training, we have now got him on the floor, and he's now working. I'll get him sworn in here in the next couple months. Item five details firefighter J.P. Robles, who resigned in May. He'd had been off and on for a total of 10 years, but 8 years of service. J.P. is a great guy, and he will be sorely missed. We wish him the best of luck. A certificate of appreciation, as directed by the board, has been issued. Additionally, in the month of May, we started to convert the trench rescue prop that's behind the station. Many of you have seen it. To both a trench rescue prop and a firefighter and civilian rescue prop out of burning buildings. Many of the building materials that we're using up there were donated. It's being used now by stations from surrounding areas as well as York Station 15. On the next page, item 7 details Margaret Faulkner and I closing the solar system RFP period. We took three total bids and submitted them to District Engineer Rob Miller, and you'll see that staff note on item 11F later on tonight as it's coming to a conclusion, hopefully. Items 8, 9, and 13 detail the annual chipping event that we've hosted in cooperation with the Fire Safe Council and the CSD in the district. The numbers on that, a total of 61 residents had properties chipped by either the California Conservation Corps or CAL FIRE Station 12 San Luis, my headquarters station, or Station 15, using the district's chipper. It was a very well-received project. Continuing on here, Company 15 helped me and several other engines do a 230-acre grass burn out on Camp San Luis on May 27th. They got to practice wildland firefighting skills, defensible fire defensible space skills, and had a good time they're there for the vast majority of the day. Finally, item 14 details our hazard abatement program. In the month of June, we started that that program. And I can tell you that the inspectors went out in the first week in June. We noted 288 violations after the first inspection. As a verbal follow-up to this item, 288 violations is about average for what we get. What was surprising to me is after the second inspection, we got it down to 72, which is really, really good. Again, but we were surprised 41 of those were for poor or unseen or missing addresses, which is statistically very, very high. We've only had maybe 20, 25 at the highest in the past. So 72 of second inspection violations, 41 were addresses, 31 were weeds. Weed abatement issues, and the inspectors will be going out next week to finalize, hopefully clear those 72. That concludes my report. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Okay, thanks, Chief. Any questions?
I noticed you skipped right over item number 4 on your report. I want to say thank you. And do you guys do service calls?
Let me go see what 4 is first before I answer.
That was quite a deal.
Thank you.
Item 4 for the public who don't have this. We have a washer and dryer we purchased probably 8 or 9 years ago when the low energy stuff first came out. And so we had a problem with one of them. We had a service technician came out, said it's terrible. You gave us a quote for $528, recommended that we purchase a brand new machine. And so the guy started playing with it. They're tinkerers. And for less than $100, it's still working today. Works great.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Chief. Okay, let's move on to 9B, Utilities Department Report. Margaret.
Good evening, Board. I'm Margaret Faulkner, here to report on the Utilities Department for May. As you can see, our production has decreased by approximately 30%. Consumption and projected revenues decreased by 27% and 20%, respectively. And we've got other graphs and tables in there for your at the bottom of the page there. Staff attended a water forum at the end of May. That was held over at the community center, and we were there representing the water purveyor to response to the executive order of the governor's. The district is defined as a small water system, so it's based on connections, so we do not report monthly to the state like the larger purveyors. And we're being asked to reduce production by 25% compared to June through November 2013, which is their baseline, or to limit outdoor irrigation to 2 days per week with enforcement, and report once in December 2015 to the state. So we're shooting for the 25% reduction, and our customers have been doing a really good job, actually. Also, we had some new big news from the utility billing department, so we have a web portal, so all of our customers can go ahead and set up an account if they'd like for themselves to check their usage, check their billing, send messages to the department. Also, you can pay with a credit card. There is a charge, a surcharge that goes to the vendor, so that's a 3% of the balance. There's also a little quick pay button on there, and that's for anybody who wants to pay a bill and not sign up to have the account. You know, so as long as they've got the account number and the balance due, they can do the quick pay and use their credit card also. Also, I wanted to talk about our annual consumer confidence report. This is a requirement of the state to be in the consumer's hands July 1st of our year. This year we went with a new vendor, and we were able to get everything done and out by June. They were mailed out the week of June 8th. This vendor allowed us to incorporate our own pictures in there, which I think looks much nicer, and we're pretty pleased with it. And then overall, we ended up saving $645 using the new vendor. So, like I said, we're pleased. As far as drainage is concerned, the district complies with a general National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, NPDES, permit for stormwater discharges for our MS4, which is municipal separate storm sewer systems. And we've been working with the district engineer and water board staff and to meet compliance and get ready to... the fiscal year has ended, so now we're going to get ready to report. It'll be due in October on the second year of this new permit. We welcome the public to look at our drainage page. That's where we keep a lot of information on the stormwater. There's a utilities drop-down menu. That's how you get to the drainage page. And we'd also ask everybody to think about, stopping stormwater pollution prevention or preventing stormwater pollution by doing whatever they can. There's a lot of items on that website. Also included in the staff note is a table for rainfall measurements that our crew takes down at the water yard. And I did it for a few years there. This is not the rainfall data that we use for our shortage contingency plan. And I just wanted to show you how little rainfall we've had. And this concludes my report for the evening, so I'm here to answer questions if you like.
Okay, thank you. I think just for the public, if you could tell the people where the actual rainfall measurement is located, where they actually take the measurements.
The crew down at the yard?
No, not the yard, but the ones that are actual for drought purposes.
It's at the landfill.
At the landfill.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And then on the South Bay Upper Blending Project, sounds like everything's moving along fine on that?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Okay, next, General Manager Report, Director Manager Kibley.
Yes, good evening, Mr. President and members of the board. This has been a very long month. We've had extensive ISJ negotiations. I've been working on Bay Ridge Estates, again trying to finalize your budget for you for next year. I've also had to do, because it's the end of the year, we in administration have had to do update all the human resource functions on our AVRA system, and then of course we do the year-end reports. There were several committee reports that were prepared. We were involved in MOU negotiations, resolution of the U.S. Bank reconciliation, work with the auditors, water conservation materials, the Palisades claim, and again the upcoming Slo County presentation. And with that, that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Okay, District Legal Counsel report, Mr. Seitz.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board. Keith, I'm glad that you're here. First, on July 14th, which is next Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors is going to have a discussion in regards to the basin plan, stipulated judgment, and other items that are going to be going forward in the coming month. The public will have the right to ask questions and comments at that. At that time, there will be a technical response to what Mr. Weimer had to say today. But in terms of the practical matters, there's a couple things that people need to know. First, as has been reported, seawater intrusion has not slowed down. It's actually perhaps even picking up pace. The basin plan, although probably not perfect in anybody's eyes, is something that has been reviewed two times. Second time by Guth Yates in terms of a peer review, and he has approved the plan. The plan is a dynamic plan, which means we're not going to be taking any commitment to any specific action other than what's in programs A and possibly C. it is going to be a results-driven plan. So if the metrics don't change, we're going to be doing more and more and more. And the advantage of getting through this process is that it becomes public at that becomes public sooner rather than later. And Keith Weimer and the Sustainability Group or any other advocate will have the ability to speak at that. And if the interest is primarily in conservation, you're probably in front of the board that will have most to do with that rather than the JPA that will be formed as a part of this. The other advantage is if we don't get this done by December 31st, everything disappears and the county takes over, and we lose all local control. I want to say that again. As of December 31st, if we don't have a stipulated judgment approved, it becomes a county issue and we lose all local control. So what are the downsides if we go past December 31? We lose local control, and there is a significant delay in getting forward in regards to a response to seawater intrusion. You know, is anything perfect? No. But have a lot of experts taken a look at our plan, contributed to our plan? The answer is yes. And a complaint and intervention, we are now at the crunch time. If the court approves this on August 14th, which is the date set at 8:30 in the morning, the court approves it, we go down the road. The effect of the plan is to affect the purveyors. It's not intended to affect anybody who has a well or could have a well and their rights in regards to what they take from that well. There will be a public notice going out as of sometime next week. I believe it'll either be Wednesday or Thursday, but I can't be held to that because I'm not in control of it. That will notice all well owners, including ag interests and interests of people who have properties that could have wells upon them, of the hearing and advising them of basically what I'm advising you now, is that we're not intending to affect their rights, and if they believe sometime in the future that we have affected their rights, there will be a remedy for them to seek redress for that. But if there is a complaint and intervention, it'll have a potentially disastrous effect of not only putting the plan that's been put forward in terms of the basin plan completely out of any sort of authority, putting in its place a county plan that frankly will have a lot less voice into. So the county is supporting our plan, so they're not anxious to get into that position. But that December 31 is a date not set by the county, it's set by the legislation that basically forces groundwater agencies, sustainability agencies to be formed. And we have put ourselves in that as basically a adjudicated basin, but because we don't have the final judgment, we have not perfected that right, and if it's not done by December 31st, it is not going to happen. So this is my pitch to say I think we're all on the same side, even if the plan's not perfect. I hope Keith agrees and that we can move forward in a positive manner to try to affect the basin as opposed to bickering at one another, although in this community, a little bickering's not bad. So, but let's try to keep our eyes on the ball, and that is reversing seawater intrusion so people can feel comfortable in what we're doing here in Los Osos. That concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board? I have one comment. If worst case scenario, and it goes to the county, then there's also the possibility that the state will take over.
Oh yeah, the state will have a significant involvement in whatever the county does, because there will be a collaborative effort between the
okay.
two.
Okay, so it's total loss of local control.
Well, there'll be a public input policy input, but I don't think anywhere near the effect that local advocacy groups could have in terms of a local agency doing that kind of thing.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. Okay, number E, LOCAC report.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Vicki Millage. I'm the LOCAC chairperson. At our June 25th meeting, I'd like to start with the sheriff's report. I'm assuming that you don't want me to just read the statistics. Thank you for the response. Okay. Well, yeah, you were there, and thank you for that. He does want everyone to know and that the fire season is on us, and that the Sheriff's Department does reverse 911 calls to alert residents to not only fires but also any other major incidents or hazards. And so for you to be able to receive these reverse 911 calls, you have to make sure that your carrier is E911 compliant. And no, I have no idea what that means, but I'm sure you can just ask your carrier that. And to register your cell phone, you can go to their website, slowsheriff.org. Right. We had two sets of county reports in our last meeting. From Carrie Brown, we learned that the Starbucks request to receive a ruling of substantial conformance on the project, and what that means is that since the McDonald's project was approved by the Board of Supervisors, that the Starbucks will be going, well, May is probably not actually going through that process, that they're tied into that. It is going before the Planning Commission. Then Dave Flynn gave us a very extensive report, actually. They're putting speed bump tables on Santa Isabel to go from, and it's meant to be traffic smoothing, traffic calming. And the tables are actually quite wide. I think he said 7 feet wide and fairly shallow. And the intention is, although 35 miles is the legal speed limit on that area, they'd like to even out the speeds because people do go down Santa Isabel at excessive speed, over 35 miles an hour. Also, the 4th Street from El Moro, the section from El Moro to Pismo, the residents in that neighborhood are requesting speed bumps to be put on that section. Those would cost approximately $6,000. And they're going to require fire department approval for that. He also announced microsurfacing begins in mid-July. It's already started, and the ADA sidewalks improvements are also in process. Okay. Our agenda item was the Golden State Water request for a new well for that project. And the LOCAC recommended approval of that project unanimously. And we had a presentation from David Hunter from Green Gardeners with recommendations for drought-tolerant landscape. And there we are. Questions?
I have one, or maybe give us a clarification. For Golden State, for their well, that's on their corporate yard, and it's their second well on that site. Is that correct?
I think so.
Okay. And then maybe you can let the public also know about the bike lanes on Los Osos Valley Road with the, going along with the project and the microsurfacing?
Yes, actually, I thought I did. I think I mentioned that at my last presentation here. After the microsurfing is done, when the lanes are striped, that's when the bike lanes will go in. And I don't have a clear date for that.
Okay.
And we might have after next Tuesday's traffic and circulation meeting at the community center at 5:30 p.m.
I think one of the items is there's going to be no parking on Los Osos Valley Road from South Bay to Palisades, correct?
Correct.
On both sides?
Correct, on both sides.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Los Osos Chamber of Commerce, do we have a report tonight?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, he had to leave, and he said there is no report.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item G, Utilities Advisory Committee. Mr. Kronowski.
Okay, the Utilities Advisory Committee met last night. We covered a number of topics. One, there was a report on the water consumption, which is down roughly 30% from a year ago, which gave us a nice little article in the Tribune. The water quality report for 2014 was presented and discussed briefly. Most of our time was spent with Rob walking us through the most recent work by Cleve Harris, geologists, looking at what's happening with our aquifer, which led to a lot of back and forth discussion, and maybe was very useful, and seawater intrusion continues. The other thing that he was arguing for and was going to implement is a more regularized checking what's going on an every 6 month basis, roughly.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, next item, director's announcements of district community interest reports, attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, seminars. Yes, Chuck.
I met with CAL FIRE and the state and federal Fish and Wildlife Departments and the county several weeks ago to talk about the Habitat Conservation Plan and incorporating the fire safety plan into that. And apparently the county has all of a sudden decided to make nice and include all of our work in with the Habitat Conservation Plan.
Really?
I think the last email I saw, there was a kind of a draft of a legal agreement between us, because Fish and Wildlife gives that Habitat Conservation Plan to an entity, and if there's a bunch of us, we all have to make sure we're playing nice together, because one party will be singled out for, I don't want to say persecution if something goes wrong, but it will feel that
way.
That's
a good word.
It was my first meeting, and apparently the county decided to play nice at that meeting, so.
Well, good job,
Chuck. That was good news. Yeah, I'm sure that's all it took.
Okay, any other comments? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to public comments for items on the Administrative Committee reports and consent agenda, but are there any items on the consent that which the board member wishes to pull?
If I could just speak.
Yes, sir.
During the last couple of meetings, I made the faux pas of not allowing people to vote individually on items, even though they weren't polled. As I reviewed that item at the beginning of the consent calendar, if any director wanted to vote either no on any item or had to abstain from any item, they could announce it now without pulling the item. I'm not trying to convince anybody to do anything different than what they said, but that is going to be the procedure going forward. So,
okay, thank you.
That applies to me on item number G of the consent calendar. I was informed by an agency that is significant in this area that I can't participate in voting on this thing because I live right here, and that's too close.
Okay, thank you. He's within 500 feet.
I'm about 150 feet.
Yeah,
so I'm within 500 feet.
Within the parameter. Okay, thank you. Any other director?
Given the interest in that item, I would like to pull it for separate discussion.
Which item?
G.
Item G, the cell tower?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we'll move 11G to 13. Okay, so let's move forward on public comments on committee reports. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just ask a question. Since it seems like the predominant amount of the audience is here for the discussion of that item, would it be appropriate to carry that before the general action items?
We can do that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so let's have public comment on the consent agenda or committee reports. Please state your name for the record.
Keith Weimer.
Everything but
thank you for the report, Mr. Seitz, and I hear what you're saying. I don't know that I share the, you know, affection, the predisposition people seem to have with local control. I mean, I do want to remind people that we've been overdrafting the basin for almost 40 years at almost 30%. And since this ISJ has been, you know, stumbling along, that's been another 7 or 8 years, and seawater intrusion has accelerated, subjecting, you know, this basin to the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act doesn't immediately sound to me like the public's not going to have even more input than they're going to have with a process that for 8 years has been behind closed doors. And let's be honest, it's not just the CSD that's running the show. It's also Golden State Water Company. And Golden State Water Company, and I don't know who else, but possibly the county, has not been real strong advocates for conservation. I mean, you guys have had to take the lead on that, and everybody else has been dragging their feet. Why do we not have an outdoor conservation program as part of the basin plan? The water efficiency part of the plan is supposed to be the strongest part of the plan, and there's no outdoor water use other than to help people purchase rain meters, rain sensors, and possibly some surveys of people that are overusing their water. Come on. That is not an outdoor conservation plan. That's somebody trying to avoid an outdoor conservation plan. That's my main concern. There's been a long time to get it to this point, and really at this point, what we're talking about is moving some wells, which has been on the books for 30 years, and we're talking about a conservation program that's basically already in effect. We're talking about the basin plan ignoring the drought and ignoring the EPA evaluation. The EPA climate change evaluation said that, you know, let's estimate 11.8 inches per year rather than 17 inches of rain per year. Let's be more conservative, and let's plan accordingly. And then the EPA evaluation said, if we do that, then you're basically not going to have any increase in your yield. Your yield is going to be actually reduced from what it was, down to 2350. That means we still have to reduce water use to get to where it is.
Okay.
And even that is a definition of sustainable yield. It's not really a definition.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, next speaker, please.
Lindy Owen, last night at Utilities, it was pretty much made clear that we're at level 4 severity, not 3, because of the rainfall measure. So we're acting on measure 3 of level 3 emergency actions, but we're actually in number 4. So I just want to throw that out. I guess we're going to ignore it for a little longer. And then on the ISJ, I'm still, you again mentioned that the wells can pump all the water they want. And that's where we have a little bit of a disagreement with this ISJ agreement. It's the county with 500 private wells pumping every drop that they care to pump, day in, day out. Then there's us cutting back, standing in our showers with pans underneath us. And then there's Golden State doing the same. Sunset Terrace, you know, they've all cut back. So I'm not real happy with the ISJ decisions because the county is in charge of those 500 wells. So the county sits at a table, and the governor came up, I think it's been 5 months or something, he came up with the Sustainable Groundwater Act, which says that all wells will be metered. It's a known fact that when a well is metered, they cut back on their consumption about 15%, just by awareness, by being part of the problem. So we can go to this hearing and we'll all go waste our time, but I'm sure that it will be approved. Moving wells around is not going to solve the problem. Not building and cutting back and doing these tanks, anything else that, you know, is productive, is going to get us someplace, but we'll waste a lot of time and money on lawyers and so forth, as we always do, because we just don't know how to save water and save a basin.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Julie Tacker again, and I was looking at your warrant packet, and you've got almost $30,000 in legal this month. That's a lot of money. That's staggering. And most of it is ISJ, but $10,000 to Mr. Seitz. You have to be accountable. There's $3,000 for audit services, and you don't have an audit. I'd like to understand how that gets paid. Ironically, you have a Verizon bill for $413. Later on tonight, you might enter into a contract that may take a dent out of that. What really bothers me is a $2,925 charge for structural engineering for remodeling the water yard building. I was at a past utility advisory committee meeting some couple of months ago, and some charges were coming through, some actions were happening with an architect on trying to restore that building, and that committee and at least two board members were in the room that night, all said stop throwing money at that building and look into a modular. That has not come before your board, and I think it's very important that we stop throwing money at that old building and look at a modular. Today's modulars are very affordable and they're very attractive, and I think they'd be very suitable for that location. So to continue to try to band-aid that thing is just beyond me.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Richard Margetson, three of you heard this comment yesterday at Utilities, but for the rest of the board, there was a Golden State Forum at the Community Center a couple of Mondays ago, two maybe, where they rolled out their conservation program level one. I don't know what they're calling it. It's not, doesn't have the same name as ours, but and their threshold is 8 units per month per household, 16 units a billing cycle. And they base that on 2 units per person for a 4-person household. The census shows, and I think we've talked about this before in the committees, 7-8% of the households in Los Osos are above 4-person households. This is one of your partners in the ISJ. You're at level of severity 3, should be at 4, possibly 5. And their baseline for their program, it's not an ordinance, it's a whatever it is, conservation program, is 8 units a month per household before anything gets implemented or any warnings or anything. That's not being a partner in trying to save this basin. That's being a partner in trying to save their bottom line.
Thank you. Next speaker. Oh, okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back.
Mr. President.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I would like to make a clarification regarding the board members that were in attendance at the UAC yesterday. There were only 2 board members in attendance at the UAC. There was a third member of this board that was there as a citizen, and I need to make that clear because there was no violation of the Brown Act.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
I'll move that we go ahead and receive and file the administrative and committee reports, and we could approve the consent agenda with the exception of item 11G.
Can I get a second, please?
I'll second that, but I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
About the warrant register. I And specifically since legal costs got mentioned, although there's an electric bill here from 2008, July of 2008, that we're just paying. Legal services charged November of 2013, November of 2014, January of 2014. Have these just been sitting? I'm puzzled as to why it take. I don't know. Are those dates accurate? Let's see. You want specific check numbers? 24-903. 24-924. I mean, they're odd, things that old.
Could you tell me what the date was on that?
6-5-2015 was the date the check to PG&E was written, and that's a $7,700 check for a bill from 2008.
That is not a bill from 2008. That's a current bill. Okay, that's probably a reference to the invoice number. And because we pay our PG&E bills on a monthly basis and therefore our wells.
Transaction description says 7-26-08 to 9-19-08 electric bill.
Well, then that's an incorrect date. That's a typo. Because that's not what reason I know that is because I signed the bill and it said the current services and what year they're for.
Okay, it's hard to imagine that a legal team would let a bill go on for
a year and a half. They would not. You're absolutely correct, sir.
Okay, incorrect descriptions. Okay. I made the second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Vice President Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Sasania?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Director Tornatsky?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
President Wright?
Yes. Okay. We will rearrange the agenda to accommodate the public. We'll move 11G up before 12 on the cell tower agreement. And we'll have to ask Mr. Tornatsky to recuse himself and leave.
Yes.
Bye, guys.
See you later.
Let me just explain the rule that requires Mr. Tornatsky to leave. The old rule was a 500-foot rule that basically said if you're within 500 feet that you do an analysis of whether or not the decision would have an economic benefit to you. The rules changed in 2015 that said basically that if you live within 500 feet, you have to seek approval from the FPPC to participate in a decision, and it needs to be in writing. I was not aware that Mr. Tornatsky lived within that 500-foot zone. I was advised of that today, and it was not time to get the written permission from the FPPC to have him participate in that short of order. So it's not that he has an actual conflict. The rule requires him at this point because he does not have written permission from the FPPC to participate. He can't participate, and he needs to recuse himself.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Okay, so let's take a look at item 11G and General Manager Kivley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President and members of the board. Back in February of 2014, Verizon Wireless approached the district with regards to using our water tank area for the installation of cell antennas. Those antennas will be attached to the side of the water tank. And if you will look, we have provided pictures that show how they will be placed so that everyone can see. There are also a full sheet of designs that are here today, so everyone has an opportunity to look at that. This is not a cell tower. This is an antenna. Anyway, they approached us, and we have moved forward with this. The county will actually be considering the minor use permit on July 17th, and this particular item has been to the Los Osos Community Advisory Council, which is LOCAC. and there was no objection at the LOCAC meeting. Staff sees this as a positive source of income for the district. It's important, however, to recognize that the district is not the final say. The County of San Luis Obispo is the final say, and they decide whether the permit will be issued. Should this permit not be issued, then the contract becomes null and void. The agreement becomes null and void between LOCSD and Verizon Wireless. This positive source of income amounts to $1,500 for the granting of the lease agreement once they receive the permit from the county, and an annual income of $19,500 per year. If you were to look at this, I don't know what the towers around here are generating, but I can tell you antennas that I've been involved with in other communities, they're normally only getting for rent as about $7,000 or $8,000 per year. As with those agreements and this agreement has a 3% increase, yearly increase that was negotiated, and the once the first five-year, the term is for 5 years, once the first five-year term is expired, there is a right to have an additional four terms. At any time during this during the renewal process, either party can terminate this contract. Now, Mr. Seitz, our attorney, can explain the termination clause because he negotiated the term rates, the termination clause rates, so that the district would be protected. Other than that, I did want to make a comment with regards to, I took some calls and comments today about some sort of effects from medical effects. I do have a statement here from the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, that's the FCC, about cell phone towers, not necessarily antennas, but towers near homes or schools. And what the FCC says is that radio frequency emissions from antennas used for cellular or PCS, personal communication services, transmissions, result in exposure levels on the ground that are typically thousands of times below the safety limits. These safety limits were adopted by the FCC based on the recommendations of expert organizations and endorsed by the agencies of the federal government responsible for health and safety. One of those includes the EPA. Therefore, there is no reason to believe that such towers could constitute a potential health hazard to nearby residents, or if they're near schools, to students. And I just wanted to pass that on because that was one of the comments that I did receive today. Today we received 6 emails opposing this, and we received 3 phone calls the day before, and one of those also sent an email, and we received 1 letter of support. So, with that, Mr. President, that concludes my report, and if you have any questions, we do have engineering here to answer the technical questions. I do have Margaret Faulkner here, who worked very closely with Jay Higgins, and then the attorney who also negotiated the contract.
Okay,
that concludes
you.
My report.
Okay, Board, any questions first?
One clarification. I believe you said that the County Planning Department will be hearing this on the 17th.
That's correct.
Okay, because the staff report says that they already
that is correct. That is not true.
Okay.
And we're sorry about that. That was an incorrect type when we prepared the report because they did not hear it. They will hear it on July 17th,
right.
And they are the final authority.
Thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll open this up to the public. Please come to the microphone, state your name for the record.
My name's Mark Tognazzini, and I live on 17th Street. This project is basically going to be right in my backyard. I'd like to first say that I'm not opposed to cell phone towers. I think we need them in this day and age. I just don't think we need them in a residential area, especially as close to some of the my neighbors and my homes as this project is going to be. I am opposed to the location of this. I have a few concerns, and I think that you're going to hear concerns from a number of other people here today. I'm just going to touch on a few of them real briefly. Like I said, we're zoned residential there. We're not in a commercial zone. we purchased our home a number of years ago next to water tanks, thinking that these water tanks would be maybe good neighbors. They're not going to be loud. They're not going to keep us up at night. We've kind of wavered back and forth. Do we really want these in our backyard? Had I known then what I know now as far as cell antennas or the cell arrays that are planning to be erected there, we absolutely would have not purchased our home there. I don't think someone should decide that for me. I had a nice conversation with General Manager Keevely the other day. It was heated on my end at times. I'm sorry if I came across as aggressive. I didn't mean to. She let me know that this project is about money for you. And it's apparent that the LOCSD needs money at this time. I listened to some of the some of the reports about it. The fact is, I disagree with her point. We're a small town. I think that our values, our opinions, our safety far outweigh the money or the monetary value. This project was struck down, I believe, about 7 or 8 years ago at the same level here. Kathy let me know that, I'm sorry, Mrs. Keevely let me know that she thought maybe the opinion of the public had changed. I don't think it has. I think we're stronger now than we ever have been. And I think that's representative of a lot of the people that are here today. She also let me know that she thought it was for the greater good of the people. I think that's invalid as well. I think you should never step on a few so that you can appease the many. History has shown that there's extreme consequences with that, and it can lead to lots of things like social uprising. I don't think we're quite to that point here yet today, but we do have some angry people in the crowd. So, finally, I'd like to direct a few concerns about the well-being and welfare of myself, my friends, my family, and my daughter who is here today as well. This is really about her. SEC, they regulate these. They're very highly regulated. I understand that. I do think that there's some problems with the FCC guidelines and the way that they regulate them. They really don't address the long-term exposure limits at low levels. And there's a number of studies from – there's a number of quack studies out there, too, but there's a number of studies from really respected members of the scientific community that are calling for these guidelines to be changed. I have a really strong background in the sciences, and I can tell you this, that science is retroactive. It usually addresses issues or problems after there are problems. And regulation is retroactive science. It fixes the problem after science has determined our problem. Okay. I'm not willing to take the chance with my problem being retroactively fixed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next speaker, please.
Good evening. My name is Pete McAdam. I live 2 houses away, and this project is right directly in my backyard, line of sight to the antennas, 50 feet from my house, my bedroom. As background, I'm a PhD electrical engineer, 30 years in communications, working on this stuff, on signal interference, cell tower design, cellular modulations, all of that stuff. So I actually do know something. I have two primary concerns in addition to what he said. One is interference and the other is property values. So the interference question is all around what proximity to a very powerful antenna like that does to little things in the house. Like, you guys have a RF router in your house? You like being able to use your local router? Probably going to get impacted. RF control devices, probably going to get impacted. Even the cellular service, when you're that close to a transmitter and you're not on Verizon, that signal leaks through and suppresses the gain of the front end and reduces the sensitivity of the phones. So I brought this up today, and I did get from LOCSD Jay Higgins' number at Verizon. He's the Verizon lead, and I called him. And he admitted there is a potential issue there. He said they would have to actually come and talk to me and determine the specific equipment that I was using. They would have to do a near-term modulation study and a study of intermodulation effects and products. And he did not know whether our capability to just use these equipments that now are out there on the thing would be impacted. He said we'd have to study it or test it. And I said, well, what if they do knock us off the air? And he had no answer. Second one is property values. You heard this. If that cellular tower had been on there, he wouldn't have bought it. By the time we have this hearing on the 17th, I hope to actually have some real estate data to present that impact, but it's not trivial. And you're talking about $19,000 a month. We're talking about houses worth hundreds of thousands. How much is it worth when you've got something like that that the public doesn't like hanging off your back door? So it's just not right. Finally, the way this was done really bothered me. It was placed on the website, sort of not very public. I found out about it when Anna and her daughter wandered around the neighborhood and knocked on the doors and said, "Do you know what's going on?" 2 days ago. Nope. You've been doing this for a couple months now. When did they say Verizon started?
3 months.
And you've already negotiated a contract. You're ready to sign to approve it. I hope you don't. I'm voting that you don't. I'm a taxpayer, and I'm voting that you don't approve it tonight. At least let it go before the county a week from now.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Hello, my name is John Robson. I'm a citizen of Los Osos, been here for 15 years, been a Verizon customer for 15 years as well. My phone worked perfectly fine even before the Verizon Tower was erected here at Sea Pines. I'd like to read something here. Electromagnetic pollution may be the most significant form of pollution human activity has ever produced in this century. We are in the midst of the largest human experiment in history, and we are. We have no idea what these electromagnetic frequencies are doing to us, are doing to our ecosystem, and is doing to our environment. This tower that we have right out the door here, that's a Verizon tower. There are no other carriers in that tower. They're Sprint, T-Mobile, AT&T. They're not servicing any of their customers through this tower. If you want to put a Verizon tower up, it does not dictate to logic, because we have a Verizon tower in town. And our Verizon, my Verizon phone works just fine. We as a people need to take care of our ecosystem and take care of Mother Earth. And as I said, we have no idea what these electromagnetic frequencies are going to do. Someone mentioned earlier that we'll find out in the future and try to fix it in the future. The electromagnetic smog that's being produced is creating a positively charged ionic sphere in our atmosphere. When that happens, the hydrogen atom and the oxygen atom have a very difficult time bonding. And we are in a state of emergency in California because of our precipitation. We have no rain. It's very interesting that we have no rain in this state, and we have cell towers all over the state of California, and we're suffering, and we have no rain. Our bee population is mysteriously disappearing. These are things that we need to do. We need our cell phones to communicate. It is reckless and irresponsible to stick a cell phone tower in a neighborhood. We need our cell phones to conduct our businesses. What do we do? This is what we do. We make a decision today to not put that cell tower in the midst of a neighborhood. And the FCC, they came out with a report and said it's not safe. Well, on a tower, this is what the tower says. This is their disclaimer. Beyond this point, radio frequency fields at this site may exceed FCC rules for human exposure. Failure to obey all posted signs and site guidelines for working in radio frequency environments could result in serious injury. I'm astonished that the FCC would come out and say something like that, but then Verizon posts this on their towers.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
My name's Karen Bainter. I don't have anything prepared, so I'm just speaking from my heart. I live three houses and then across the street from the tower. And I wasn't notified, and I know that it's been going on for, 16 months. And, I have a cell phone. I've had Verizon forever, and my cell phone works perfect. I don't want to go to sleep with a cell phone tower, because this is where I sleep. This is my home. I've worked very hard to keep my home. It was underwater, and now I finally have equity in my home. And it's like everyone else. If I was to try to sell my home and I have to show them I have this tower, there's a fear there. I'm going to lose, you know, hundreds, thousands, or not hundreds of thousands, worth that much, but I'm not going to be able to sell my home. So there's the home value plus the health risk. I just feel that the money that would be generated for the CSD, obviously we're a community, we want to work together, but what it's going for is not to help the community. It's not there to help the wastewater project. It's not there to help us with the things that we're dealing with, the drought. It's there to help, you know, with rent or something like that. I just think that we needed time to, in our community, you know, on 16th Street, on 17th Street, and all of Los Osos, to have known about this project so we can, you know, work together as a community to say, is this the right place? Is this the right project? And what is the money going for? But I don't think that it should have been just kind of snuck to us and one day open my mailbox and it says, this is what we're building. And I don't think it's fair. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
My name is John Fouché. I live here in Los Osos, have been since 1999. I oppose these cell towers, any cell tower that's in a residential neighborhood. I have, like a lot of people, I echo everything that's been said tonight. There's a lot of information out there on what these AMFs can do or may do, what we don't know they do, and it's one of those things where the first speaker, he said it very well, that we will find out someday what they do when it all hits the fan. So I oppose. Any cell tower in a residential area is just a bad idea.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
I'm Nancy Worden, and I live kitty corner from where this disaster is going to be hopefully not put. I've listened to everyone, and they've all been wonderful. But there's one thing I would like to say. I feel this has been done so underhanded, and we have this marvelous community that is not being democratic. If y'all got cancer or a loved one in your family that you've been taking care of with cancer, you might rethink this because it could happen to you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
Dennis Sheridan. I live adjacent to this site, and I'm opposed to it completely for a number of reasons. But one of the reasons I'm opposed to it is we voted this or came before the board 7 years ago with a similar audience and expressed similar concerns. And the board at that moment unanimously said if there are this many people worried about their health and their livelihood and community, that we should take it immediately off the agenda. And it was a fairly clear-cut decision back then. I'm hoping you're getting the feeling that there's a public input here that we're opposed to this for a number of different reasons.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. I'm Bonnie Tognazzini. I oppose this idea. It may be good for Verizon, but it's bad for the people that live there. The people that live there, my son and daughter-in-law and granddaughter live there, they don't want this in their backyard. I don't want it in their backyard. I talked to Kathy yesterday, and I said, why don't you put it in your backyard? She said, well, I had one in my backyard when I lived down south, but she doesn't live there anymore. Why don't you put it in your backyard? How would you feel about that? What if it was your son and granddaughter? I don't want it in my backyard. It may be a good deal for Verizon, but the money is not worth it. There are so many studies out there, and bottom line is, what side do you want to believe? Do you want to believe it doesn't hurt you, or do you want to believe it does hurt you? I'm not willing to take the chance. I don't want these people that live there to take the chance. It's a bad idea. I oppose it. Please reconsider it. Look at it if it was in your backyard. Find another spot. And let the people in this community know what you're doing. Don't give them 2 days to rush in here and go, what the heck is happening? Thank you very much. I hope you seriously consider it.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
My name is Joe Bloom. I'm a resident of Los Osos, and I strongly oppose turning the water tanks into a Verizon facility. I don't think cell phone towers belong in residential communities. for all the reasons stated earlier. There are other options. One of the reasons cell phone towers don't belong in a residential community is there's a direct relationship between the distance of the tower and the biological effects depend on that distance. In your recitals, you state, no residents or dwellings are located within 30 feet from the location of the Verizon facilities. That's absolutely not true. The residence at 1302, which is on the north side of the tank, is well within that 30-foot limit. For that reason alone, you can't pass this resolution this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
I'm Mark Cognizini, and I'd like a couple things other than the health issues that have been brought up tonight. I think you have to look at the possibility of these being serviced 24 hours a day. That would be very disruptive to the people in that area. They can service these at any time of day or night, and that's not going to be really fun for people that are living in that close proximity. I think you also have to look at setting precedents for other cell companies that might want to put their antennas on these tanks. It was brought up that these are antennas, not a cell tower, but they're just using the tanks as the tower. So it really is cell towers going there, just that the tanks are going to be the tower. So I oppose it. I would hope that this board doesn't even send it on to the county. I think it's a waste of their time. I think you need to protect your residents and look at the cumulative effects. I think we as a society often do things, and then 20 or 30 years later, we think about what we did. I think you can look at things like asbestos. I think you can look at things like lead paint, things that were all safe for generations before us, but now they are not. I think it's very important to look at that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Ann Cantor. I've lived in Los Osos since 1992. Less than a half mile from the site, and I can't improve upon the comments that were already made. They're all excellent, every last one of them, and I'm sure that you want to protect your citizens. The bottom line of the benefit of this project to the Community Services District, there's no way that it can possibly match the potential detriment, including the loss of property values that we're looking at in this situation. That's completely aside from any argument that the electromagnetic field may or may not be detrimental. We don't know. It's not worth the risk. But there's enough concern in the public regarding property values that people are not going to want to buy there. What Mr. Tognazzini said about he would not have bought the property is absolutely true, and other people will feel that way. So you're talking about affecting people's bottom lines with their real estate, which is usually their number one asset throughout their lives. I have a piece of property close by that's worth quite a bit, and I would be furious if this happened in my neighborhood. And it's close enough that I'm already furious. You can probably hear it in my voice. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that you folks care very much about your constituents, and I'm sure that you'll do the right thing. I hope you will do the right thing and reject this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson. My concern, as was stated by a number of people, is the process. It sounds like this lady here basically alerted the neighborhood. But I remember at a committee meeting where the director that's not here anymore, when the subject of the opposition in the past, how strong it was, stated he lives right across the street, did not believe the neighborhood opposition was anywhere near what it was back then. I think you've heard from the people tonight that it's still there. I think you need to err on the side of safety and caution. And I'll give you an example. Coming from the Midwest originally, when power companies for years were putting in high-tension power lines through farmland in Illinois, Michigan, Indiana. Same thing was said. It's not going to have any effect. Not going to have any health effect. Not going to have any residual effect. But when the dairy farmers started noticing their milk production being reduced by 30, 40, 50% without an explanation, it took years for them to figure out it was because those farms were adjacent to those power lines. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a made-for-TV movie. Ron Howard was the star of the movie. He was a lot younger then. But it was about that issue and that issue being taken to court. But when that all started, there's no health issue here, no residual effect. They're too high in the air. We need to build them. We need to do it. We're going to take this chance for $19,000 a year.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next speaker.
Julie Tacker, I'm very impressed with the neighbors. I thank you all for coming up. First question on a little bit of tonight's process with Mr. Dornatsky stepping down with his conflict. He passed out material supporting the project. You can't do that. And Kathy told him he could, and Ann ran and made more copies. I watched it all go down at the end of closed session. That doesn't make sense. He cannot participate, period. So, he did. And you let him. Kathy, I watched it. So, hey, you're interrupting me.
Hold on. Everybody, keep it calm.
So, Kathy also said that the San Luis Obispo County Planning Department is the final say. Absolutely not. You are. Tonight, with this contract, kick it to the curb. You say no to the contract, there is no hearing next week. Period. It's that simple. There's not enough money to talk about here. You have 2,700 water customers at $1,625 a month. That's less than 50 cents a house. If you really need that money per month, then you put it in the rate. But you already raised their rates. And Ms. Kivley's pursuing a building with that rate increase. How you got here is what's the problem. She says in her staff report that negotiations or some Verizon approached her in February of 14. It was on your agenda one time in closed session, May 1st, 2014. Rather than take any preliminary negotiations, any dollars to your board through the committee process or any previous hearing, the planning department notice got to the neighbors before your agenda went out for this tonight's meeting. This agenda item was on consent. This is all about sneaking it under the radar so these neighbors would not have found out. I don't know who was advising them, but I think it was bad advice, and it looks really bad on you, and it's really bad on your general manager. Mr. Bloom pointed out the flaw, the erroneous lie in the resolution that there's no homes or residence or dwelling within 30 feet of the project. There's absolutely, and I'm sure every one of you could raise your hand, how close is your home? Under 30 feet?
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
Lindy Owen, February 2014, that's 16 months ago. I would say this is about as underhanded a thing I've seen Ms. Kivley pull in the entire time that she's been our general manager. I opposed the cell tower that is sitting out here. I have a friend who has heart conditions. He can no longer attend C-Pine's concerts because the radiation emitting from that tower makes him sick to his stomach. Now, maybe everybody else doesn't have that reaction, but when there are a number of our residents that do have the effect, you better take it seriously that it has does cause health consequences. And I oppose that tower because it's migrating birds, bats, there's hawks, there's a million reasons, the environment. But it was of no interest to the owner of this Rocky that own setting that owns this. And he accused me of taking business away from him. I accuse Ms. Kively of taking business, taking profit from this CSD by going after a building that we do not need and I don't believe we can afford. And if this is the way we're going to do it, I think we really need to review Ms. Kively's purpose here, because this is not the way.
Let's stick to the item, Lindy.
I am speaking to $1,500 a month is about what it's going to cost to move to a bigger building. Of course, we don't know because it's secret. And that's where we're, I think all of us are sitting here saying we're tired of the secrecy. We'd like things to be out front. And when you have a cell tower that you're proposing and you know that you had opposition 7 years ago, be honest and be fair with the people that live in the area. And if their real estate goes, values go down, Ms. Kipley's not going to pay the extra. The CSD's not going to pay it. They'll have to get together and do a class action suit against you. And that's certainly a waste of time and money.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker.
Sandra Hedges, Los Osos. I agree with the last few speakers. They're absolutely correct. I'm just amazed that one person in this room didn't get up and complain about it. And it's just a shame that for the last 4 months I've been coming here, we have been talking about Kively and her...
Let's stick to the subject, please.
Okay. We don't need an extra building. We're fine where we are.
No, the
tower we do not
tower.
Need.
Okay, thank you.
The tower kills people. We got enough. Our government is killing people already with geoengineering. Why not kill us faster?
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. I live at 1341 16th Street. Across the street and slightly downhill from the proposed cell installation. I got two notices in the mail about this. This went before LOCAC last year, twice. And if people did not pay attention, I mean, I'm sorry about that, but it LOCAC...
Ms. Hedges, please
LOCAC
be quiet.
LOCAC is at night. People come to these meetings at night as well. Anyway, LOCAC recommended approval. So, also I'd like to say that the technology from 7 years ago is not the technology that they're using now. And also that these cell towers go in intermittent bursts. It's not a continual thing. There were three arguments against the proposal: health issues, property values, and possible interference with shortwave radio operators' equipment. The health issues say that the American Cancer Society says that these facilities are safe. I put out a big stack of papers from the American Cancer Society, but I see no one picked them up. Anyway, they had 3 points. At ground level, near typical cellular base stations, the amount of RF energy is thousands of times less than the limits for safe exposure set by the U.S. Federal Communications Commission and other regulatory authorities. It's very unlikely that a person could be exposed to RF levels in excess of these limits just by being near a cell phone tower. IARC also noted that exposure to the brain from RF fields from cell phone base stations mounted on roofs or towers is less than 1/100th of the exposure to the brain from mobile devices such as cell phones. So if you're using a cell phone, you are in more danger than this tower could ever give you. One study looked for signs of DNA and cell damage in blood cells as a possible indicator of cancer-causing potential. They found that the damage was no worse in people who live near a cell phone tower as compared to those who don't. On property values, I think that depends on the age and knowledge base of the prospective buyer. The younger the buyer, the more phones and tablets that any household may own could be relevant to wanting good service, so a cell facility might be a plus. shortwave radio interference. The argument was made that a cell tower might put out interference to shortwave radio in an emergency, thereby keeping the shortwave radio operator from saving lives. Well, I only know of one of those in our neighborhood, and if that person no longer lived in that house or was out of town, that wouldn't be doing me any good in an emergency. I want the best service available when many, many users will simultaneously be accessing their cell service. So I would ask you on the board to please think of safety in an emergency. Think of science.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
My name is Anna Tognazzini. I also live right behind where the proposed antennas are going to be going. As a lot of people have said, we were really surprised. I did get the public notice a few weeks ago. I only found out about this meeting by chance when I was looking over the website, looking to meet some of the directors and things. And I was really shocked that there was a meeting tonight to approve this agreement with Verizon when we hadn't even had the opportunity to have the public hearing. I don't understand how you could possibly be representing us when you would vote on something even before listening to our opinions. So that really upset me, especially with my daughter living there. And my husband works, we've both worked incredibly hard to have our home and to improve it. I have spoken with multiple realtors, including my mom is a well-known realtor in the Bay Area, has been practicing for over 30 years doing that. And she has been sending me dozens of studies, things that do prove real estate value goes down near these things. You're saying it's not a cell tower. Well, it's not a tower per se. It's not a fake tree. But you're turning the water towers into a cell tower. It's the same thing. There, one particular study published by the Global Appraisal Institute, which covers worldwide appraisal issues, concluded that on average 10 to 20% decrease in home value. That can mean over $100,000 for some of us, and that's just not acceptable. Many people have spoken on things that I also agree with. The bottom line, these don't belong in residential neighborhoods. Not in mine, not in anybody else's, and we deserve a say in that. I hope that you'll listen. One final thing is that I want to know why this site was chosen. Verizon, I don't think, chose it. Maybe they did. But why was this site chosen? Has an alternative site analysis been done to prove that there's no other acceptable site locations for this that are not within such close proximity to residential homes? And why are more Verizon antennas even necessary in Los Osos at all? I looked up on their website, which is public information. It shows the entire town of city, whatever we are, this whole area, our beautiful community, has wonderful cell coverage. There's absolutely no need for another tower at this point. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker, please. Okay, no more speakers. Okay, let's bring it back to the board. Any comments?
I just wanted to say thank you for coming out and participating. I apologize if our process hasn't been as transparent as you like, but tonight we heard from you in this room, and there's been other hearings with LOCAC and everything else. So I think at the end of the day, the process worked out, hopefully. And we hear you.
Okay, thank you.
I have a couple things that I'd like to say. One, I've heard that there are holes in town in cell service, particularly on 11th Street, even with Verizon. So it's not to say there's not a need. I don't think that's real. In terms of alternative sites, that's a question I have. I don't know what they went through to look at sites for this service. I was told that Verizon approached LOCAC about a year and a half ago They'd been having trouble finding a site on 11th Street. Church turned them down. Someone at the LOCAC meeting said, hey, try the CSD. They've got water towers. And that's how this kind of came around. But I don't know if they did, how much they did in terms of alternative site selection. My biggest issue is the property values thing. Scientific evidence seems to go both ways, and I don't know which side really is more truthful, but it does seem like when you have that kind of conflict, you err on the side of caution. There have been, what was the, asbestos and lead paint, I think we heard, right there. And I don't want to do this to people, not for $19,500. That loss in property value in one house would offset that. Those are my thoughts.
Okay. Marshall?
Oh, excuse me. Where did this handout come from?
It's from the American Cancer Society.
No, I didn't know that, but how did we get it?
Well, Lynette has them. She has a whole pile over there, and then we were given...
I just was wondering.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that I'm going to agree with Chuck on the thing that concerns me most is really, and I think it's the property values and the cost-benefit ratio, for lack of a better term. And as I look through this document here, and even if I, and I'm not going to try to play health expert in any way, shape, or form, but, you know, if you read this document, and I'm just looking at one page here, there's four times on this page where it says this makes it unlikely, this makes it unlikely, this makes it unlikely. So this is an area of active research. So, I mean, I think what Chuck said is true, that this is something that's undefined at this point. So, and contrary to what's, you know, the process does bother me, quite frankly. I know it did go to LOCAC, and I was on the board, and I went to LOCAC when we talked about the Verizon Tower that eventually ended up out here, and the tower that ended up at the Van Beurden property over there at South Bay Boulevard and Los Osos Valley Road. So I've been involved in this before. So, you know, the location in a residential area concerns me. You know, and then the issue of land use planning is really a county role, not our role, concerns me. So, you know, what I would really like to do is wait to see what happens on July 17th, and I know that's not an option, but that's where I stand right at this point. So I'm interested in hearing both yours and Michael's and John Eric's comments, because I'm going to tell you I'm undecided at this point.
Okay. Well, my first of all, I want to thank everybody for turning out. I think it's very good you came out and expressed yourself. It shows the process is alive. And I do, my concern is goes along with on the property value side. That is a valid point. I think that the science is here nor there. It's still open for that. And gentlemen, in regards to the interference in the neighborhood, that's a concern to me. I'd like to see more information about that. If you have your other RF devices and such, that's problematic. So in that regard, I'm kind of in the same boat as Marshall. I'm torn on this. I don't think that the $19,000 is worth the loss in the property values, if that is a true statement, and I believe that it is. I think that you know, the Planning Commission meeting on this is going to determine which way it goes. So I think that if we turn it down, though, is the hearing, what happens to the hearing?
We don't.
Don't know. Okay. Legal? I'm not. Just a minute.
I'm not hiding. It's just in this process, I don't think if they have an agreement that that process unlikely was going to go through. So.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, they need consent of landowner, and if we don't, that would, yeah, okay.
Okay. Okay. So in light of, like I said, the thing that is brought out for me is the property value issue and the interference issue, and so I'm not going to be able to support it.
That being said, I'll make the motion with the recommendation that we vote no.
Okay, comment?
I'll second it.
Okay, let's have a vote, please.
Is there a second?
Yes, we do.
Vice President Novelski.
I just want to clarify that this is, I said no vote. This means we're denying.
Right.
Okay, no.
Not approving the contract.
So no or yes?
I'm voting to not approve the contract.
Which is a no.
Yes is no.
Yes.
Yes is no.
That's what I thought. Yeah. That's why I asked the question. Yes.
The motion was to deny, so I'm voting yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
If yes is no, I'm yes.
Director Storm.
Yes.
And President Wright.
Yes. Is no. Well, thank you for turning out.
Thank you for coming. Local government does work.
Okay, folks, we have other items on the agenda, so you're welcome to stay.
Or we'll meet you at the Ale House in a few minutes, Figaro Mountains.
If we can get out of here. If we can get out of here. Okay, folks, let's move back to, you have some quiet, please? We're trying to finish our meeting here.
I'm not saying.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item 12A, California Special District Association 2015 board election. Director Kibley, Manager Kibley.
Thank you. Mr. President and member of the board, the item before you is the election to fill seat A on the CSDA Board of Directors to represent the Coastal Network. There are three candidates, and their statements are attached for your review. And it's up to you to make a decision as to which candidate you would like to vote for. Thank you. That concludes my report.
There's only two inside here.
What happened to three?
Did number three one? Drop out?
No, on the second, is there one on the second page?
No. Oh, yeah, Peter and Mark.
Yeah.
Oh,
there it
okay.
Is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was.
No. Yeah, it's just one.
It's not
three.
Not a continuation of the first.
No,
one.
Thank you.
I assume that too.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any discussion on this first?
Does anyone know any of these people?
Jinx.
No.
Well,
you?
I don't. Marshall. Bob Blair. I mean, Bob's been on the Napomo CSD on and off for a series of number of years. I mean. And he has served on the CSDA board in Region 4 from 2002 to 2004. So, and he's been on the NCSD from 94 to 2004, and then he got reelected in 2012. So he's a local person. As far as any more than that, other than knowing that he was a previous representative, as far as his politics or anything, that I don't know, to tell you the truth. But he is local, that I can tell you.
Yeah. Okay. Any other clarifications? Okay, any public comment on this? Okay, seeing none, bring it back. I can accept a nomination from someone on the motion. Fill in the blank. I do agree that Mr. Blair is local versus the other two are one is in Ventura and the other I'm not quite sure where he's at.
I'll just take this opportunity to say if anybody's listening, when I get these things and it's like a letter in here that doesn't look like much care was given to it. I have a hard time wanting to just vote for someone I don't know. I'm not expecting them to come here and do a dog and pony show for me, but anyway. I don't know any of these people.
I mean, we could vote. I mean, I'm just laying out as an option. We don't have to cast the vote if nobody's comfortable.
Well, that's true.
Okay, I move we cast a blank ballot.
Okay. I have a motion to submit a blank ballot. Do I have a second?
I'm sorry.
You want to second it? Mr. Cesena, would you like to consider a second, or do you want to nominate somebody?
No, I'm more inclined to at least nominate the local fella. I mean, two people submitted good candidate statements here.
Okay, so first motion dies for lack of a second. Do I have another motion? Who's got the better picture?
It's hard when you...
That's a tough one.
I don't really know people.
I know they're not exactly the best quality picture. Or subject matter, for that matter.
Maybe I should have made the second.
You want to reconsider and... Okay, so we'll bring the motion back. And we now,
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a second for a blank ballot.
Submit a blank ballot.
Blank ballot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So the motion is to submit a blank ballot, and we have a second. So we have a vote. Please.
Director Storm.
Yes.
Director Cesena.
Yes.
Director Tornatsky.
Yeah.
Director Tornatsky?
He said yeah.
Vice President Ohilski.
Yes.
Director Wright.
Yes.
President Wright.
Yes. Okay. We nominated none of the above. Okay, let's move on to 12B, Seawater Intrusion Update. General Manager Kibley.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, members of the board. We're going to have a brief presentation from Rob Miller this evening with regards to the results of the seawater intrusion study that was conducted in April. The next study will be conducted in October of this year.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Miller, welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. We did have a good discussion at the UAC meeting, and I'll keep my comments brief and hopefully descriptive, since you may not all have this in front of you. This is the seawater intrusion monitoring event that was completed in April. Historically, we did these only every 5 years or so, and not with firm regularity, and now the board has committed and the other ISJ participants have committed to doing it every 6 months, which I think is a very good idea. The basic result of the study is that seawater intrusion is continuing at a rate that's not slowing, and that's the bottom line conclusion. There are a couple of things that I think are important, little technical details. One is that when you have these types of monitoring events that occur often, people are often frustrated when we don't come back and calculate a new rate of seawater intrusion every time. But it's difficult when the time is very short between monitoring events. Every 5 years gives you a good average, but every 6 months we're hesitant to recalculate the rate every time. So you won't see that recalculation, and the map that was drawn is based on the average rate over the last 5 years. What we will ask everyone to do, if you haven't looked at the report and you only want to look at one thing, there's a very important metric, which is one of the few things that are not that's not controversial about the basin plan, is everyone likes the seawater chloride metric. And what that is it's a number of key wells that are very sensitive to seawater intrusion. They're on the front. And those particular wells will be a leading indicator. If there's success in reversing seawater intrusion, this index, this chloride metric, will be the first place where we begin to see the real physical data that proves that things are improving. And so at this point, that curve continues to show continued seawater intrusion. The shape of it is of concern, and that's something that we can look at every 6 months. And will reflect some of these drought cycles that we're in. But I wanted to note that it's gone up consistently over the last since 1987. So that's, I think, something that we can all agree on, that's a chloride metric that has to be watched. We'll have another monitoring event in the fall, as Kathy said, and I'd be happy to answer any detailed questions. Wait, before I do that, one more point that I just forgot. If you're looking at the Palisades well, which is usually the first well that people turn to, please don't give a lot of credence to the seawater potential result in that well. All the chloride levels went down, but it's not because of some amazing recovery. It's because that well has been sitting idle, and when that occurs in that location, the upper aquifer that sits above that well slowly leaks into the well, and so it doesn't give you a true result. So if you're looking at that, and I'd be happy to answer any detailed questions.
Okay. I have a question. Are you saying that I read the Cleve Harris report, and are they recommending spreading out the actual seawater intrusion to a longer cycle but maintain the 6 months on the chloride?
They just didn't want to recalculate the rate every 6 months.
Okay.
At most, they would like that rate to be calculated October by October. And so you may see them attempt to do that this October.
Okay. And then the chloride level, is that at the leading edge, or is that indicative of other areas inside the plume?
It's really the leading edge.
It is leading edge.
That's why those wells were selected, because if things get better, that metric will improve.
The canary quickly. In the mine.
It's the canary in the mine.
Yeah. Go ahead. Next.
I had a follow-up. I guess it's a similar type question, but I just want to make sure I understand, because I'm still a little confused. The figure 2, the chloride metric, that's the canary in the mine, so this is the leading edge, the wells that would be at the leading edge.
Right.
Okay. I guess the other question I have is, I know during the ISJ, obviously, we pushed to do this biannual monitoring in lieu of the once every 5 year monitoring or whatever we were doing previously. And I know it's still just a 2-time snapshot in time, and we haven't monitored at the same time of the year over an extended period of time. So, and I'm trying to put you on the spot as an engineer here. So, at what point, I know it shows in increase, and I'm not disputing that, but at what point are we going to be comfortable that we have a model that we can work from?
First thing to recover, I mean, a very important question, of course.
Yeah.
The first thing to recover will be water levels. And so that is a physical effect that happens quickly. There's also a water level metric in the basin plan. And so that, because that responds to pressure based on pumping regime, that should happen fairly quickly. This one will turn around only after the pressures that have occurred because of depressed water levels are relaxed. So look for water levels first, and then look for this.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Any other questions before I open it up? Seeing none. Okay. I'll open this up for public comment. And can I ask the people in the back of the room to not talk? We can hear you. That's bad enough.
Let's not make it worse.
Let's not make it worse, please. If you want to go out and listen, fine. Go ahead.
Keith Weimer. I do want to point out that, yes, and this I did bring up metrics before, metrics being something that we can rely on, more so because it's an actual well test, you know, so rather than the modeling that you might rely on for long-term decisions like building and so on, the metrics are a much better basis. I do want to point out that even these metrics, you know, they're somewhat limited. Even in this report, you will notice that the testing of the wells, there's supposed to be 30 wells, now there's 20, and the other 10 are private. They're apparently in negotiations to try to get access to those wells. So remember, I keep criticizing the basin plan, and somebody mentioned that one of the faults with that is that we don't have mandatory monitoring of wells. The county can put in an ordinance, And that should be done. That is a part of the Groundwater Sustainability Act, and the county has every right to do that because that act is in effect now. That should be part of the basin plan. It would give us a more complete picture of what's going on with the basin. Because also, you know, there is a fairly limited picture of where this seawater intrusion is. One of the things the basin plan does is it proposes some new wells so that we can see if there's seawater intrusion in the Cuesta by the Sea area. Those things should definitely be developed quickly. It's been a recommendation for a long time by the Monterey Bay Watershed Institute and so on. I want to know if there's any concern over the slight increases. It's now over 100 milligrams per liter in the observation well. It's zone E, right on the coast, right by the Pasadena Street, and also the 8th Street is up past 100. And the seawater intrusion assessment, 100 milligrams per liter of chlorides is called a precursor. When 100 milligrams per liter of chlorides hit the Palisades well, it was not more than 2 or 3 years before it was 250 milligrams per liter of chlorides. So I want to know if that's a precursor again. I also want to know exactly what the... I want you to remind people, Rob, if you would, what the metric wells, which ones they are. You said they were at the front, but when you talk about at the front, you're talking about wells that are already seriously impacted by seawater intrusion. Any change in the pumping metric wells, I mean, that would affect somehow the chloride levels that they're showing? I mean, has anybody cut back on pumping or increased pumping? Because that would tend to affect it. I want to know what you think the Palisades well would be right now if it weren't shut off. And I wanted to know about the 3rd Street upper aquifer well. The levels keep dropping there, and we're not getting anything in the water quality control board, water quality report on the 3rd Street well.
Thank you. Okay, another speaker, please.
Julie Dacker, and I'm going to talk about the Palisades well, like I have been for about 10 years. I think we need to turn it off. We can use it for monitoring. What I did learn recently is that the actual park well would be in the same trough, is quite deep, and could also be pulling certainly much less water. But the county is in the trough, and I think we need to be considering that as a draw right in that very neighborhood. Keith talked about monitoring private wells. There is an ordinance. There's been an ordinance for a very long time. Only recently did the county start enforcing it. And we haven't had a whole lot of wells go in, except last week. One went in right by my house. And I did get the permit. I looked at it. They will be required to be part of the monitoring program. What I was surprised is that it was considered an ag well, over-the-counter permit, didn't need environmental review, didn't have comments from the ISJ. It's in the Golden State Water District. So their domestic supply will come from Golden State, but their outdoor irrigation will come from this well. It just seems to me that any time a well permit is coming before the county is a partner in this ISJ and should be taking a very strong look. Yes, Public Works is saying put the monitoring on it, but I don't really know what it's for. It's a one-acre parcel. How much water are they going to use? And then it's really near where what I think, and I've heard, where we want our new municipal well to be. It's near the creek. It would pick up underflows. You know, you're going to go through a huge environmental process to get a well and a whole lot of money, and this guy got a permit over the counter. So that's unfortunate.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Lindy Owen. Yeah, this is really disturbing. I mean, here we are cutting back 30%. We're, you know, patting ourselves on the back, and yet when you look at this chart, I'm sorry, this is 2017, it's estimated to shoot way up over 200, almost to 200. I just don't see that we're making any progress, so I don't know, again, private wells, go ahead and issue permits for private wells. We have no idea how much they're taking. I happen to know somebody who has a private well who lives on a freaking oasis. I know two people. It's an oasis there. They're so proud of their greenery and their trees and their flowers and their wild animals coming in to drink water from their property. And we're standing in our shower with little plastic tubs trying to save every drop. This isn't working. So I appreciate that we're doing the monitoring again. I mean, it's ridiculous, sad that we tried to ignore this water issue while we focused on a sewer issue. It'd be funny to see how the nitrates are doing. They're probably a lot lower nowadays, too. Anyway, things don't look good, folks. That's all I can say. It's time to get the wells on board with us. If they're not part of the solution, then they really do remain the problem.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker, please.
Richard Margetson. I've heard it twice tonight. I heard it once from Keith, and I heard it once from Lindy, about the reduction in consumption because of the Tribune article. The Tribune article is based on a moment in time compared to a moment in time. Not an extended period of time compared to an extended period of time. Rob, I hope you're not using that in any of your calculations or comparisons or where we're going, where we're at. We are not down 30 or 35%, 13 over 15. We're not for the district. For the month of May in that article compared to the month of May the next year or the year after, we may be. But there's months in that chart where consumption went up. So if you'd use that month, how do we explain 40% increase in December of 14? It has to be, it's somewhere in the 16, 17, and that's great. We're doing great things on conservation, but that's vastly overstating it, and I hope you're not using that in any of the analysis going forward or in anything you're putting out.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the public? Okay, seeing none. Rob, you want to answer some of those questions?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm not sure I got all of it. John Cougar was in my ear. But the issue of precursors that was brought up and some of the increase in nitrates, I'd say absolutely those are of concern. I had a chance to pull the basin plan wells that are being used, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, wells that are used in the chloride metric, and they're designed to be, if you're interested, they're lower aquifer wells 8, 10, 11, 12, and 15. And if you look at those wells, and they're in the basin plan, which is posted online if you're interested, those are wells that don't necessarily sit behind the front like Golden State's Rosina well. That's an important well, but a number of them have not yet been hit by the front. And so they're leading indicators. And when we see chlorides creep up in those wells, absolutely, we're looking at precursors, leading indicators that concern us, which is the reason for the metric. And also, if you recall, the district's own water shortage contingency plan includes several of those wells in the same areas with triggers for our own purposes, in addition to our climate triggers. As far as private wells, I just wanted to make one comment that I did see the county take action on a private well and condition it to both report quality and quantity. So hopefully that occurs with every additional private wells. And I think the district, certainly in all discussions, advocates metering of all sources of extraction from the basin. I think it's very important to be able to monitor what's going on in the basin. As far as the reductions in water demand, I think it is important to celebrate all that we've done, though in terms of the modeling, it's used as a year over year. We don't use that monthly data. It's the annual data, which reflects the total annual extraction from the basin. Apologize if I missed some questions. Be happy to answer any others.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. I just had one, but it's more of a process question in regards to that well that was mentioned, this new well. And it was over-the-counter permit. With everything going on, isn't there some sort of mechanism in place that has a deeper review on a well?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to give a satisfactory answer to that. I know I see from time to time referrals that come out on new wells. And so hopefully they aren't just – maybe they'll issue ultimately the health department permit over-the-counter, but I think all those wells have to get a coastal development permit before they're drilled, I hope. If they're not, then perhaps somebody else who understands the process better, Marshall, can answer
that. This is counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is counterintuitive.
It is counterintuitive. I think one action step we can take is to inquire with the county planning department, hey, what is your process?
And
how can we be more advised every time a new well goes in?
And also talk to our partner in crime, Golden State, and find out what their process.
Tuesday afternoon might be a good opportunity to
might
do
be.
That.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll make a note of that as well.
Please, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other comments? Yes.
I was just going to say I looked into getting a upper or at least a first water well for grass or whatever at my house a number of years ago, long before I was on the board, and I don't know if they've changed it since, but it was a relatively ministerial process.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just follow up on that. I do know of another person who did apply for an upper aquifer well for irrigation purposes only, and that did have to go through the entire planning process, and they did have to get a use permit.
Okay.
So I guess they're all over the board.
All right, so no consistency. I've seen some of those, too, and I assume consistency, and it sounds like we need
to confirm. Well, I think that's something you need to follow up on, is we need a consistent approach towards that.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments on this item? Okay, thank you, Rob, for the update.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item 14, future agenda items.
I think we want to move. I move that the board receive and file the report 12B.
Let's make a motion on that.
Second it.
Okay. Roll call.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Vice President Ogilvie?
Yes.
Director Sasania?
Yes.
Director Tarnowski?
Yes.
President Wright.
Yes. Okay, let's move on to number 14, future agenda items. I have one. I wanted to go to FAC first, but I want us to explore the possibilities of a two-year budget cycle, see if that's something that's worthwhile. Just take a look at it. And if it isn't, it isn't. Thank you for your comments, audience. So that's just my idea. Any other future agenda items?
Yes. I would like a subcommittee appointed to work with a subcommittee from the community center about reestablishing a relationship that allows the meetings to move back here. This radio going on all night long in my ear. We had an air conditioner on because it was too warm in here earlier when we got the place packed with people. This is not an appropriate meeting place. Lady in the wheelchair has trouble getting up to the bathrooms even. I've asked several times, I'd like to see a subcommittee appointed to work with the community center to try and get that resolved.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll volunteer for that.
Okay. Okay, any other comments? Okay, closing board comments?
Tuesday, 1:30, the county supervisor's office. All things about the ISJ and the basin plan. That's coming Tuesday. The meeting chambers. Yeah, the hearing chambers.
Before you continue on,
yes.
Staff needs a little bit of direction here. Earlier there was a motion to submit a blank ballot. Hopefully you're not anticipating that we're actually going to submit a blank ballot. We're just not going to submit a ballot.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a... We are not submitting a ballot.
Okay.
You could set it up there empty. Yeah. Just kidding. It's a waste of postage. Okay. Any other closing comments?
I just wanted to follow up on CPR AED training again on Sunday, August 2nd from 2 to 6:30 at South Bay Community Center. It says, I'm just going by CDF's handout, 2 to 6:30. So.
Well,
so anyway,
it says 2.
Anyways, there is that training session on Sunday. If you're interested, you can confirm it on our website because we'll have the correct time and date there. Or you can...
2 o'clock.
All right, we're going with 2 o'clock.
I'll check with the chief.
Yeah, so if anybody has any questions, check on our website.
Better to be early than late.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to thank all the people for coming out tonight because I think it is a good opportunity for people to be involved in the community, and obviously people came out tonight and their voices were heard. So I'd like to express my appreciation to everybody that came out tonight.
Yeah, I'll second that. I think it was a very good exercise in our democracy, and it was good to see people coming out and being involved. Any other comments? Okay, seeing none, we will adjourn the meeting.